It's tax season, and at LifeLock, we know you're tired of numbers. But here's a big one you need to hear. Billions. That's the amount of money and refunds the IRS has flagged for possible identity fraud. Now here's another big number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it guaranteed. One last big number. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for the threats you can't control. Terms apply.
Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What is up, my friends? We welcome you into another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I am your host, Dan Canobio. Boxing world, like I say, every single week is buzzing. We're getting ready for a huge fight weekend coming up with an ESPN card featuring Jose Ramirez and Jose Pedraza. And then on Saturday night, the return of Chocolatito Roman Gonzalez taking on JC Martinez in a fight over on DAZN. Thank you so much, everyone that tuned in last week for the Sugar Ray Leonard episode. Great one. It's been a great run here on Inside Boxing Live, bringing you some of the biggest names in the sport, covering the sport as a whole. And this week, it's no different. We got Jamel Herring. He's going to be my co-host, of course, former 130-pound champion. We're going to get through all the big topics, whether it's Canelo Bivol, whether it's what we saw this past weekend with Josh Taylor and Jack Catterall, and just a really fun discussion with Jamel Herring. Later on, Lee Groves of CompuBox and a boxing historian will give us his top five Chocolatito moments and a breakdown of the Chocolatito fight, which is upcoming this weekend over on DAZN. It's a great fight weekend, Friday and Saturday night. Love that too. Also want to tell you that this episode is brought to you by KO Tickets, serving fight fans since 1999. This spring schedule heating up. We're going to talk about that in this upcoming episode. So KO Tickets is your plug. Whether it's Chocolatito fight this upcoming weekend, Jim Boone still has tickets at KO Tickets. You can still get tickets to see Chocolatito fight this weekend. Over March 19th, you're going to see Virgil Ortiz, East Coast fans like myself, Edgar Berlanga headlines a card at Hulu Theater, and of course, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. KO Tickets is your plug. Call Jim Boone at 702-591-1638. You can text him as well. It's kotickets.com. The first 10 buyers to mention today's show will receive a free copy of Ring Magazine's November issue celebrating the 40th anniversary of Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns, their first fight. That's kotickets.com. You don't have to deal with the apps. You don't have to deal with the website. You can talk to Jim Boone himself. I've done it myself. I've gotten tickets for friends, and it turned out great. So kotickets.com. Appreciate that. Now, let's get to Jamel Herring. All right, let's bring in Jamel Herring. He is my co-host this week. I mean, yes. It was only a matter of time. It's only going to be a matter of time before you are like a full-fledged media member. The Jamel Herring show has been in a full effect. Like your little side career, obviously, world champion. Also, Jamel Herring show. I've been there live to see those press conference theatrics from you. So we're going to chop it up. Obviously, we'll touch on your career, but also get into a lot of boxing, man. There is so much going on in the boxing world right now. But what's up?
Oh, yeah.
How's everything? You know, give us some updates.
Everything's good. Everything's good. Like you said, I just need to get back in the ring. I still have that itch. But for the most part, the time off has been good. I've been dibbling, dabbling on other things, obviously. But I'm always excited to speak and be involved with boxing first. So
yeah, of course, you will have a broadcasting career when you decide to hang them up, which is not going to be anytime soon. I know you want to fight again. You know, obviously coming off that tough loss to Shakur Stevenson, it was right. A great fight. It was a great lead up. You're a world champion for numerous defenses. Do you think you'll stay at 130? Are you looking to maybe test the waters at 135? 140 is like...
I'm glad you brought that up.
Soon to be wide open.
I'm glad you brought that up. Actually, my next fight should be at lightweight at 135. Ooh, I don't have it. And the thing is, I don't have an issue staying at 130. But right now, after speaking with Top Rank, there's no really plausible bout that I can take at 130 at the moment. Okay. And things are very interesting, you know, saying the weight class up north, which is at 135. And we all know I started my career at lightweight, so it wasn't really, it's not really an issue.
Yeah.
For me, like I told them, if it makes sense, I'm all for it. Yeah. I, as of right now, I can honestly tell you, Dan, that we're actually looking at to face off against another former world champion at lightweight. So that's the update. Also, I should be back in May. So I say about in a few weeks or so, I should be back in training camp with my team, from Brian McIntyre, Red Spikes, Esau Diegas, to have a full 8-week camp. So I'm looking at, like, again, May 14th, I should be back in the ring.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the April schedule is loaded. So we know May 7th is going to be Canelo Bivol. So right. I see May 14th, we see Jermell Herring back in the ring at 135, targeting a former world champion. I like that. Love that. So let's get into it, my friend. I guess we can start with what happened last week. Josh Taylor, Jack Catterall fight, it was the biggest fight of the weekend. There were some... just some bad scorecards. I don't know how you had the fight. I had Catterall winning 7-5, 8-4. You know, right from the opening punch, the first punch of the fight was an overhand left that landed on Taylor. Many more of those to follow from Catterall. Maybe faded late, but still was able to outland Taylor down the stretch. And I thought did enough. How did you have that fight? And you can't be surprised by a bad scorecard.
No, I'm not surprised by scorecard. It's crazy because I was actually traveling that day in that moment, and literally when I landed, I was seeing the point where it was the end of the 12th round, and then you already know that infamous waiting around for the scorecards, and I was like, what's going on here? So I still just waited. Then, you know, I'm friends with Josh Taylor, so I when I seen the decision, I congratulate him, but not knowing what had happened and took place. And then I got the reaction from Twitter, and I love Twitter because Twitter is always gives you the news right then and there. So when I look back on it, again, like I said, I love Josh, but I believe that Catterall could have, you know, Jack could have definitely deserved that nod. And it just comes down to, you know, I know Josh is getting a lot of heat, but at the end of the day, Josh Taylor isn't the judge. You know, he's not in charge. He's not, you know, he doesn't have control of what the judges do. And that's the main problem. We have to start doing something about the judging, because a lot of people don't know boxing, as they say, is a poor man's sport. So what I mean by that is a win or loss can definitely decide how you can take care of your family and the opportunities you may get in the future. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, the people might say Jack deserved the win, but in terms of the boxing aspect of it, Jack may have to take a step back, or he might have to again climb to get to the top of the mountain again for an opportunity. Yeah. And that's what hurt. That's what not only hurts the sport, but hurts a fighter. We don't know, you know, Jack's situation at home either. You know, he may be depending on these big paydays, but now he has to take a smaller cut because of a bad decision that could have been easily, worked with if they had the proper type of training and judging.
The referee was abysmal. That was the worst refereeing job in a big fight I have ever seen. He wanted to make himself part of the fight. Marcus McDonald, you're great. Now you're a household name in Scotland and probably in England too with Jack Carroll. But I guess hold the judges accountable is the least we can do. Find better judges. I've talked about this.
And it's the least, but you always see it in the end. Those same judges, they'll be back on another big fight card like 3-4 months down the road.
Right, because Jermell, it's a small group. Like, who the heck says, when I grow up, I want to be a boxing judge? No one. So it's just the same people. It's a small little pool. And, you know, I'm on an Aegis, but most of these guys are older. They're retired. You know, they do it on the side. It's not a full-time job. It doesn't exactly pay that well. So there needs to be like reform, but it's easier said than done. Just get it right. Maybe, you know, I know the WBC did a whole convention, a judging seminar. You know, they want to at least try to put out the impression that they're looking to train their judges better. And it's just part of the sport. It's part of the sport. But like you said, Jack Catterall suffers. You know, he did take a step aside fee. So at least he got something there, but nothing's ever going to equal the amount he would have been set to make
Exactly. I mean, think about it. He would have been he'd have been undisputed. That could have definitely, changed his whole, like, not just one belt. This he would have been the lineal world champion.
He would have been Kambosos of 140. I'm pretty sure he doesn't have
like, world.
Right. He doesn't have I don't know his exact promotional contract or whatever, but I'm pretty sure he would have had a very good leverage.
Let's be honest here. This is the UK. This is a UK based fighter as well. I mean, could you imagine him filling up, stadiums just being for the UK having another undisputed world champion? So, that goes a long way over there.
Yeah, I hope he gets another big fight. His stock has never been higher, but it's different. I mean, it's 100% different. He's going to have to scrap and claw. The only thing maybe he has going for him is if Josh Taylor moves up to 147, which I really think he's going to do.
Obviously, you pointed out that opens up everything again. And
140 is wide open.
You might start seeing some of these even guys at lightweight. Let's not forget Teofimo Lopez. He's been talking about moving up. I wouldn't be surprised if Devin Haney gets frustrated with everything that's going on at 135, but his situation, and he looks like he's busting out the seams. Mm-hmm. And he moves up. So, I mean, I always say the boxing landscape easily changes in the 3 to 6 months. You'll have this division can be hot. I mean, because at one point in time, remember when I first became champion in 2019, super featherweight, you had everybody had with a belt. You had the guys like Tank Davis, mm-hmm. Tevin Farmer over here, Miguel Burchell, myself. It was just a loaded full of talent. And then like in a blink of an eye, the guys are either losing belts or moving up
and so
like the boxing landscape can easily change even for the junior welterweight division if Josh Taylor relinquishes all those titles in a blink of an eye.
Yeah, they'll just be dispersed and then all the games behind the scenes, promoters and the
promoters definitely going to put their guys. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, even when Tom Rank, they already have guys lined up. Look at the Ramirez, Jose Ramirez's next fight.
Yeah, Pedraza Friday night.
That can and so on. And there's so many guys that's already lined up to be the number one contender or fight for interim titles that can turn them into world champions.
Yeah, that when four belts get relinquished in a blink, that all the promoters, all the networks come out and try to scoop those up. And that's exciting. There's always turnover in boxing. When the fighters move up in weight class, titles get relinquished, it keeps everything fresh. And I like that. Let's talk quickly about a fight that also happened this weekend. Chris Colbert, one of the more shocking, I'm not really shocked that he lost because, I thought he was a good fighter. I thought he was, not great, but, first of all, his game plan was just, I didn't understand it at all. Not a big puncher. So why are you doing a rope-a-dope, took on a guy that was hungrier, short notice. And then at the end, just getting on your bike. I said this afterwards on Twitter. I've seen fighters get on their bike because they have a fight locked up and they don't want to get risk not getting knocked out.
Yeah.
Never seen a fighter run because they knew they lost. I mean, that's going to take a long time to get over. It's going to take a long time for fans to forget. Nice kid.
It's also going to take a while even for promoters, even Al Haymon himself to try to sell him again as the next big thing. I mean, like I said, people for the most part, even my own situation, they remember your last outing. So it's up mm-hmm. to you as a fighter to go out there the next time around. And you have to make a huge statement. I mean, I've been there even with, coming from when I fought Jonathan O'Kendall or the criticism I took. I took it on the chin, but I knew as a fighter, I had to come back and do something big. And thank God for the Frampton performance. I was back in there being, mentioned as one of the best in my division at the time, even going into the fight with Shakur. But mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, as a fighter, you have a responsibility overall. So he has a lot of damage control that he needs to fix within himself. And he basically won't be able to do it until he gets back in the ring because they'll especially today in the world of social media, fans will always remind you. If you even speak on a fight, they're going to bring up your fight.
his mentions are probably brutal.
You can't do anything. So, but yeah, I mean, like you said, I never seen it where you knew you were down, but you took the last two, three rounds off to run circles around the ring.
Yeah, I never seen that. Never seen it. I mean, I've never been in the ring, so who am I to judge? But I mean, I do comment on the sport, and I've seen a lot of it. I'd never seen something like that. I mean, you know, maybe who knows? I thought his legs looked bad from the get-go. I just thought the game plan was off.
And I mean, who knows? Maybe he had a bad weight cut. Who knows? I mean, these are things that I also look at as a fighter. But at the same time, you know, the fight fans don't care to hear it, especially when you're a guy that's been talking, having a lot of brash talk, comments about
it. Yeah, I saw your tweet.
Around your way. I mean, like I said, the guy attacked me after my fight with Shakur. But again, I'm fighting some guy who's had a full camp and is one of the best up-and-coming fighters in the sport of boxing. Yeah. You, on the other hand, you talk down on the man who had a 3-week notice, and then you basically ran, you know, to the closing round, the championship rounds.
Yeah. Humble pie. He's going to eat some humble pie. And that's the beauty of boxing. You talk trash, you better back it up, because if you go running, they're gonna come running after you. They're gonna come running hard on social media, whether it's Instagram. I think back to Danny Garcia when he fought when he lost to Herrera, or he was just hit with the cherries in the comment section.
I think that went on for like a couple of years. Every time he had a fight coming up, they threw cherries at Danny's crazy. Not a bad, and Danny's actually a good fighter. I mean, this is a guy who
great guy.
He say was supposed to win that fight. He beat Amir Khan, was supposed to win that fight. Mm-hmm. But it's that one fight, and it just basically haunted him.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. We're going to be rolling out Canelo versus Bivol press conference this week. We're going to formally announce the fight for May 7th. I love this fight. I just think Canelo's just on another level right now, just hopping weight classes. You know, this isn't an old Kovalev at 175. This is like, isn't the guy at 175, because that's Beterbiev, but this is the second best light heavyweight in boxing right now.
Yeah, Bivol is still, he's tricky. He's very tricky. He's not doesn't have the best killer instinct, but he's very fundamentally sound as a fighter. And I like Bivol, of course. You know, the clear cut favorite will be Canelo. Like, this guy right now, whether you like it or not, is the face of boxing. So, you know, like you pointed out, he's jumping up and down weight classes, trying to fight, you know, champion of the champion. So you got to give him that. But yeah, I mean, I think it'll be a fun fight. And of course, fans will still tune in.
Yeah, of course. That's the thing. It's like, when you get to the level of Canelo, it's like everyone has an opinion on him. Good, bad, ugly, he's great, this, that, and the other. But, you know, when it comes down to it, you're going to watch his fights. He's the Mayweather of this era, where you have to tune in to see.
I know some of my friends hate when I say it, but I'm like, hey, at one point in time, Floyd could do whatever he wanted. And like you pointed out, fans were going to, they could complain about it all through the buildup, but they always tuned in. The same thing for Canelo.
Yeah, they want to see him. They want to see him.
I'm
not
saying like these guys get to a level and they don't want to fight, but these guys are still fighting champions at the end of the day. Okay, just because they might not be fighting the champion you want to see
doesn't mean
that they're not fighting competitive fights. Another point, away from this, the Lomachenko-Kambosos situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are upset that Kambosos is fighting Lomachenko instead of guys like Devin Haney. But let's not forget, Lomachenko is not an easy outgoing. Just because he doesn't have his O, that's just one thing.
But it's not a duck.
It's still a competitive, a great fighter in his own right.
Yeah, it's not a duck. Dangerous. People were saying, George Kambosos' first defense, if everything goes right, is going to be against Lomachenko. I mean, that's absurd. That should be celebrated, but it's just fans. You know, fans, I always say fans is short for fanatical. So they're fanatical, whether you want Canelo to face Charlo, whether you want him to face Benavidez, whether you think he's not fighting them for a reason. Same thing with Haney. There's a lot of fans that think
Kambosos in his own right, especially after the long wait and build up to get to Teofimo Lopez. You would normally give him a pass if he got that one homecoming, that one homecoming tune-up bout. Yeah. But like you pointed out, his first defense is Lomachenko, and people are still upset about that. That's crazy.
It's boxing fans, man. They're great. They're great. They're very passionate. I'll give them that. They're in my mentions all the time. And but Bivol is tough, man. He is tricky, like you said. He's very, very tricky. He's got sneaky good power. He can throw 60, 70 punches around. He'll jab your face off. He'll move. He's big. And there's no rehydration clause. Which
and think about it also, it's like you pointed out, all the traits of Bivol, people forget, even at light heavyweight, Canelo was having issues with Kovalev because of the jab.
Definitely.
And it's like I said, this is that was a old, tired, you know, war-torn Kovalev at the time when you look at it. Now, if you put those same traits on a younger guy like Bivol who actually had a higher output, it could be a more fun fight than what people actually expected.
No, it's going to be a really good fight. I think that Bivol's last couple of performances have kind of, you know, people are like, he's not knocking out guys that he should knock out. You know, he's kind of, you know, UD. He's just unanimous decision Bivol. But I'm telling you, it's different when you fight up. Some guys fight up to their competition. Some guys fight down to their competition. You know, his last two fights have been against relative unknowns on small cards. This is all eyes on you. Probably Las Vegas, Cinco de Mayo weekend against the face.
Biggest
box.
Fight.
Yeah, probably, I mean, it's going to be great. I think, right. And that's legitimate light heavyweight title. So if Canelo beats Bivol, and then obviously he's rumored to fight Triple G next, which he would go back down to 168, defend his undisputed title, but he'll also have the light heavyweight title. And then Beterbiev and Joe Smith are going to fight for the three belts. So in theory, Canelo could be undisputed in two different weight classes at the same time.
Don't worry, people. Someone's going to find a reason to complain.
That's absurd. If everything goes well, if everything goes right for this guy, that's what drives him at this point. You know, he's getting $160 million for three fights. I mean, that's $53 million per fight. He has all the money in the world. So I don't think money drives him. Of course, it's a big factor, but it's the history. You know, I think legacy.
I mean, of course, I would like to see him fight the Charlos and the Andres, but these two opponents, they're not bad fights. Everyone loves a trilogy. Right. So
It's a commercial fight. Like my friends will hit me up about Triple G Canelo. Like let's just get that out of the way because I don't really care to see it for the third time. Yeah. I just want to see how Golovkin looks against Murata, and then I will.
That's the real question because you know Golovkin has kind of had a subpar. His last outing was kind of like subpar. Mm-hmm. He's been out for a while, so I really want to see how he looks in his next outing before we even get to speak about a Canelo fight because like I said, he's getting up there as well, and he's been in a lot of big fights himself. So let's see what he has left.
And back to your point before that, like I still think Canelo can fight Charlo. He still can fight Benavidez. He's only 31, and he's got to fight two, three times a year. So he's free agent. So I know fans want it right away, but you know that could still happen down the road. It's very much in play. You know, he wants them to all fight each other. I don't know if you saw that Ellie Sekpak.
Yeah, I've seen. I was about to mention that. At least
that was good.
I mean, and that's a great point, though. Everybody wants Canelo to fight everybody, but these other guys are not fighting each other. And I know Benavidez came out and said, look, I did call out Plant, Charlo, and I give him that. But, you know, these guys got to start wanting, you know, they'll mention it in the interview, but are they really making the actions, the push for those fights?
Right, yeah, it's one thing to say, and you're right. And I do think it's going to have to happen. I mean, these guys can't sit around. Canelo's tied up. Yeah. He's going to be tied up until at least December. So if you're Benavidez, I know he's fighting Lemieux, which, you know, yeah, okay. And Charlo has nothing. Charlo has fought one time since the Derevchenko fight in October of 2020. He has one fight. It was that fight last June. I can't remember who he fought, but he looked Juan Macias Montiel and didn't look great, Charlo. So I like Charlo. I want to see him fight Canelo, but he hasn't done anything over the last couple. Not only that, he's not even in the same weight class. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with that. Some big fights this weekend, Jamel. So we got Friday night over on ESPN, top ranked card, Jose Ramirez versus Jose Pedraza, Mexico versus Puerto Rico, the 140-pound division, like we just talked about earlier, could be up for grabs if Taylor leaves. Ramirez's first fight since his first loss to Josh Taylor. Pedraza is Pedraza. Everyone knows who he is. Sure. He gave Tank fits, and he's been around for a while. 50-50 fight, I think. Leaning more towards Jose Ramirez, though.
Jose, that's my brother, that's my guy. But this is, like you pointed out, Pedraza is not anyone to take lightly. Especially when he becomes the matador and when he starts boxing. Cause I know Jose personally too, since we was in the amateurs. Jose can box, but his main weapon is to get in your chest and stay there. Now, and Pedraza, you know, he's going to pick his shots and move. And then on top of that, he throws a lot of punches when he wants to. He throws a lot of punches and that can frustrate and cause fits. And I'm pretty sure he probably watched. Well, I know for a fact, you know, him being a champion, he's watched the Taylor fight with Ramirez and picked up some things in terms of, you know, frustrating Jose. So it's definitely an interesting fight. And like I said, I could see it going either way, in my opinion.
Hats off to Jose Ramirez. I mean, taking this type of fight.
Right after coming off the loss, he's trying to get back in the mix. And I love that.
He's a guy too that was rumored to be going up to 147. So, but if he can still make the weight, like you said, stick around long enough, he can get a title shot too. Whether, you know, fighting Teofimo or fighting some of the other guys, Zepeda is under Top Rank banner, and I know he's in line for a title shot too. Arnold Barboza has been chirping.
Yeah, Barboza's under. That's what I mean. Like, there's pieces for these guys. They're ranked highly in all these different sanctioning bodies. Yeah. and especially majority of them are under one umbrella. So like Top Rank alone had you know, can put fighters in places to grab you know titles left and right to make more unification fights in the future.
Yeah, it's beauty. That's the beauty of ESPN's and Top Rank deals. They're not afraid to put these big fights on regular ESPN. Let them go, like Stevenson and Valdez, which is going to be one hell of a fight. Who do you side in for that one? I know
it's funny, like you put up my broadcasting. They actually called me to commentate that fight. I know I'm actually going to be commentating April 9th, and they asked me to do April 30th, and I told them I have no issue doing April 30th as well, it depends on where I'm at in my own training camp. But
up on the desk.
They need to put me on the desk, but I think. Not because I lost, but I think Shakur just has a lot of like styles make fights. And when you look at Oscar Valdez, is a great fighter in his own right. But when you look at his last fight with Canseco, the boxer, he had a lot of issues those first five rounds, at least, with just dealing with the range and the jab. Mm-hmm. Now we know Shakur is not stupid. He's not gonna want to get in a dog fight with Oscar Valdez. So they can cancel that. Shakur is great with range. I mean, even when I was in there with him, being a longer fighter, he knows where he's at in the ring. He's great with distance, and more importantly, his timing. His timing and his eye coordination. So he, like, if he sees you even make a twitch, he's already prepared to react to for defensive. So I just feel like Oscar, also being a smaller man, he's gonna be working uphill to try to even get to Shakur. Because, I mean, I look at it as, if you look at his fight when Shakur won the featherweight title, something similar like that. You know, this guy's trying to get in on his chest, trying to get in there, and Shakur just basically picking the shots. But one thing, and the thing is, I spoke to Shakur personally, because we do text back and forth.
Yeah, you guys are friends now.
Yeah, we're friends. But I told him, I said, listen, I said, at the end of the day, you need to bring the same intensity you brought in the ring when you fought me with this fight, because this is not just a big fight in terms of you being a unified champion. This is a fight that can now, as you wanted to be placed on the path of power.
Oh, hell yeah.
You need to stay focused, and we had a great conversation. But
that's awesome. That's
I'm looking forward to it. And like I said, Oscar Valdez, I know he's hungry and he's no easy outing. So I told Shakur he has to be sharp all 12 rounds.
Yeah, that's a great fight. April 30th. Valdez wants to land that patented left hook. I want to see Shakur get, I think he's going to win. I think Shakur's going to win. And I also think he's destined to be top three pound for pound, and whether it's in the next year or whatever, 18 months. I want to see him face a little bit of adversity. I want to see Valdez hit him with the left. How does Shakur react? Because Shakur has, his punch stats, I have all the stats, like absurd, like outlanded his opponent in like 45 straight rounds, barely gets touched, and double digits barely. I mean, his defensive metrics are off the charts. So I want to see if Valdez can crack that, crack that code. And, you know, he's got Eddie Reynoso in his corner. It's just unbelievable.
Valdez definitely has a great team. Eddie Reynoso is great at building the game plan. Because like I said, we've seen even Canelo change up different styles for different. It just depends on the opponent. So he definitely has a great team, but like I said, I will obviously lean towards Shakur. But
yeah, I think I don't think
it'll be an easy outing. But no. Who knows?
Love it. So many big fights coming up on the schedule. April, March is going to be good too, but April is the month. Every weekend there is just one big fight after the next, and then we roll into May and the return of Jermell Herring in mid-May. Love that. Fighting Marine, thank you so much for coming on and being my co-host this week. I think you have a future in boxing media when it's all said and done.
I appreciate that. Anytime, man. This is always great. Just like, especially when you have a huge schedule, it's always great to talk about a lot of good content out there with the sport of boxing. So I love it.
Love it, man. Catch up with you soon.
All right, Dan. Take care.
All right, let's bring in the one and only Lee Groves of CompuBox. He's a researcher for us. He's a punch counter. He is a walking boxing encyclopedia, one of the best people in boxing. Lee, how's everything going? I know we don't have baseball, but we have boxing.
Yeah, we do. And in West Virginia, we have pretty nice weather, sunny and 70 degrees. That's unheard of.
That is unheard of. I went to West Virginia University and those warm days in Morgantown, those were good. We didn't go to class those days. Don't tell my dad, all right?
Yeah.
So let's talk Chocolatito. Obviously, he is fighting this weekend. It's a huge fight for him. Anytime that he fights, it's a big deal. He's taking on JC Martinez. And we'll get to the breakdown of the fight, but I wanted to have you on to kind of go through the statistical breakdown or the how just unbelievable this guy has been over the years when it comes to punch volume, when it comes to accuracy, when it comes to prolific performances. So we're going to do a top five. This is Lee Groves' top five Chocolatito Roman Gonzalez performances. Take it away, Lee, with number five.
Number five was his rematch with Francisco Rojas in October 2010. So at this point, Gonzalez was the WBA interim champion at 108. And this was a rematch of their February 2009 fight in which Chocolatito retained his WBA minimum weight title by a majority decision. So that was one of the tougher fights of his reign at 105. So now nearly 19 months later, Gonzalez wanted to prove a point. And he did so emphatically by blowing him out in less than two rounds. In just over a round and a half, Gonzalez landed 81 total punches, 74 power shots. And in doing so, he landed 54% of his overall punches, a very high number, and 61% of his hooks, crosses, and uppercuts. In the second round alone, Chocolatito landed 70% of his power shots.
70. You always
70.
You watch a fight and you'll hear everyone, all going back to the HBO days, every analyst say, when you get close to that 50% mark, when it comes to power shots, you're most likely going to win the fight. And for 70, that's utter, annihilation. So yeah, number amazing. Five, Rojas, the rematch for Chocolatito. Had a lot of rematches in his career. This was supposed to be a trilogy fight. He is not afraid. I think that's the reason why fight fans have gravitated towards these lower weights, because they'll run it back. You know, they have no problem making the best fights. They have no problem, you know, making rematches with these fights. And that's been the case for Chocolatito's career. That's number five. What do you got for number four?
So number four was his October 2015 fight with Brian Valoria. And in Valoria, he was facing a former champ at 108 and 112. And he also was facing a member of the 2000 US Olympic team. And while Valoria was able to hang with Chocolatito early on, he just couldn't keep up once Gonzalez shifted into overdrive. Gonzalez scored the first knockdown of Valoria's career in round three, and he averaged 106 punches per round in the final four rounds of this fight before stopping him in round nine. In stopping Valoria, he landed 42% of his overall punches, 55% of his power shots, and on top of all that, he produced the fifth highest connect total among flyweights in CompuBox history with 335, and the second most landed power shots among flyweights at 315. That was a pretty awesome performance he put on that night.
Yeah, just put it into perspective, 315 power shots. Just this weekend, Fernando Martinez, when he upset Jerwin and Kaas, landed 421 power shots. So that just showed you, you know, I always like to put things in perspective. I know you do as well when you put together our research and when we're just talking stats. But yeah, Chocolatito lit it up that night. And, you know, it's funny you bring up that he threw, what, 100? He was averaging 102 punches thrown. That's what around the average. 106. That's around what he was averaging. I know it's just one fight for the last fight with Estrada. The guy's longevity and his just sheer, you know, when it comes to just putting together great performances, like the consistency of his punch volume is in super, super impressive. That was the case that night, a big time performance from Chocolatito in 2015. All right, we're heading into the final three. What do you got?
This is amazing. The third fight on this list was his first fight against Srisaket Sorungvisai, a fight that he lost by majority decision. Mm-hmm. He entered this fight as the reigning number one pound-for-pound fighter. And even though he officially lost this fight by majority decision, most observers, including me, thought he did more than enough to win despite suffering a first-round knockdown. The basis for this was that Gonzalez had one of the best statistical nights of his career. He landed 441 total punches to Sorungvisai's 284. He landed 44% of his total punches to Sorungvisai's 30%. And he landed 56% of his power shots compared to Sorungvisai's 36. And not only that, Gonzalez's 372 landed power punches set a new CompuBox record at 115. And he lost?
He lost.
Man.
How did that happen? I know. I was there. I was ringside. That was on the Triple G Jacobs card. It was the co-main event. And right, like you said, Chocolatito was the guy at that point. He had a few fights on HBO. People started to understand who he was. The hardcores knew him, but now the casual boxing fans were understanding who he was. We see him in a co-main event on one of the biggest cards of the year. He outlands his opponent by almost 200 punches. Like you said, you went over all the percentages. One of the most brutal fights, all things considered, you know, whether, you know, you agree or disagree with the decision. I think most people would disagree. But one of the most brutal fights I had ever seen ringside. Just so much blood in that fight. You know, it's up there with Triple G versus Derevchenko when it comes to most brutal fights I've seen ringside, where I question, like, why? why we do this, and it was one of those nights, and that was tough for Gonzalez, and obviously the rematch did not go well, and then that's when everyone thought he was done. That's when everyone thought he was finished. He was only 30 after the two fights with Rungvisai. But that was a night where we saw it this past weekend with the Catterall Taylor, with the judges just got it wrong. Judges got it wrong that night. You know, Chocolatito won that fight.
Yeah, he did.
Number two.
So number two was his first fight with Juan Francisco Estrada in November 2012.
Yep.
Now, going into this WBA light flyweight title fight, Gonzalez was just ripping through his competition. He had knocked out eight of his last nine opponents, all within seven rounds. And many expected the same fate for Estrada. But even though Estrada lost a lopsided decision on the scorecards, he was good enough to force Gonzalez to fight and extend himself fully. And here's the evidence for it. They combined for 2,133 total punches and 1,622 power shots. But in the end, Gonzalez had one of his best nights as he outlanded Estrada 419 to 257 overall and 335 to 235 in power shots. And here's another thing. He landed 40% overall, 40% of his jabs, and 40% of his power shots. That's a rare trifecta in CompuBox.
Yes, the very rare 40-40-40 club. You know the 40-40 club in baseball? 40-40-40
club, yeah.
The 40-40-40 club in boxing, that's uncharted territory.
It really is. And not only that, he finished the fight very strong. In the final four rounds, he outlanded Estrada 170 to 115. And considering the fighter that Estrada would eventually become, this fight and this performance looks so much better, doesn't it?
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, just that's what I marvel over, and it's one of the, like, my favorite, one of my favorite stats ever. And that just says a lot, is the fact that Roman Gonzalez threw and landed the most punches in a fight in 2021, in 2020, and in 2011. That just shows you right there, 10 years apart, with so many wars in between, he still had the highest output of any boxer in all of boxing. The guy is a national treasure. He's a world treasure. Can't wait to see him fight this weekend. All right, I'm doing a drum roll here. Drum roll. Number one, Chocolatito performance on Lee Groves' list is?
It is his July 2009 fight against Katsunari Takayama. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is one of the best and most exciting but lopsided wars that you will ever see. The two men combined for 2,705 combined punches, 1,354 for Takayama, 1,351 for Gonzalez. So it was a true two-way war. And they also combined for 2,189 power shots. And Gonzalez threw 1,242 of them. Gonzalez retained his WBA minimum weight belt because he was so much more accurate than Takayama was. He landed 44% overall to Takayama's 29. And landed 45% of his power shots to Takayama's 33. He landed 147 body shots to Takayama's 100. And he finished strong in the last four rounds, 275 to 143. But here's the topper. This is why this is number one on my list. He landed 50 or more total punches in six of the 12 rounds. And in three of the final four rounds, Gonzalez landed 70 or more total punches and 70 or more power shots.
That's just amazing. Insane. Especially down the stretch too. Like, you know, when guys, most guys get tired, most guys fade. Not this guy, not Roman Gonzalez. And also that fight was significant because it was the most combined punches landed in a fight in 105 history, 988. Roman Gonzalez has CompuBox records in three different weight classes, 105, light flyweight, and super flyweight. Of course, most combined punches thrown in a fight. That came twice for Roman Gonzalez, did it. In that Estrada rematch last year, when they combined to throw over 2,500 punches. In this fight, they combined to throw over 2,700 punches. I think one thing that's clear from this discussion is that for the last 12, probably more years, 15-ish years, Roman Gonzalez has been an absolute beast. The hardcores have watched him over the years. The casual fans have picked up on him. And now I feel like he's getting his just due. I would say over the last couple of years, of course, when he won the title again back in 2020, that's kind of lit off a resurgence. Many people had him beating Estrada, but he's in tough this weekend. He's in tough with JC Martinez. Let's talk about the fight this weekend. Supposed to be Estrada for the third time in steps. JC Martinez jumping up in weight. We see Bam Rodriguez do this just a few weeks ago, and he won. Are you giving JC Martinez a chance, and how much of a chance are you giving him?
Giving him a really good chance of winning the fight. And as you mentioned, I'm looking at this fight through two historic prisms. Last month's fight between Jesse Bam Rodriguez and Carlos Quadras. You know, first, Rodriguez was a late replacement for Sonoran Visay, and Martinez is a late replacement for Estrada. And second, Rodriguez is 11 years younger than Quadras. Martinez is 7 years younger than Chocolatito. And third, Rodriguez is coming off a 112-day layoff compared to Quadras' 15 months. Here, Martinez is coming off of a 106-day layoff, and Chocolatito's been off for nearly a year. Rodriguez ended up flooring Quadras in round three and winning a decisive decision. So what will happen here? The second prism is that in Chocolatito, Martinez is facing his idol, just like Rocky Marciano did when he faced Joe Lewis, like Terry Norris did when he fought Sugar Ray Leonard, and to a lesser degree when Larry Holmes fought Muhammad Ali. The big difference between this fight and those fights is that the older fighter Chocolatito may still be at the top of his game. After all, most people, including me, thought he should have won the Estrada rematch.
Right.
So After this long layoff, does Chocolatito still have it? We'll find out on Saturday. But as for me, this fight is very similar to another fight from the past, Larry Holmes and Carl the Truth Williams, in that the older man is fighting a younger mirror image of himself. Mm-hmm. Because one can say that Martinez patterned his style after Chocolatito. He's a whirlwind, just like Chocolatito is. And like Holmes versus Williams, I believe the older man is going to have a tough time holding off the younger version of himself.
Yeah.
This is going to be man versus man, motor versus motor, and I believe this fight will live up to every expectation.
Wow.
I'm choosing Martinez to win on points because he's 7 years younger, because he's coming off a shorter layoff, because he's fighting at a more comfortable weight. There was word that he was wanting to move up to 115 anyway, mm-hmm. and he'll be motivated by an opportunity to win a world championship in the second weight class and do so against his idol. I think Gonzalez is closer to the end than the beginning. And at 34, he's ancient by 115-pound standards. Yeah. Martinez may be just the kind of fighter who will make Gonzalez grow old. And not only that, he's a switch hitter. So that's another wrinkle that he's going to have to account for. It's going to be a very tough night, and it's going to be a great fight, too.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be well said, Lee. It's going to be a great fight, and I'm curious to see a few things. If Martinez can fight fire with fire, Chocolatito throws, close to 90 punches around, especially over his last five fights, is 93 punches around throw. Yeah. I want to see Martinez can match that pace, and history has shown that he can. When his opponent throws steps it up, he steps it up too, and the power I want to see if he can coming up from weight, like you said, though he's probably more comfortable 115, so the power department, where Roman Gonzalez isn't considered a one punch knockout guy anymore, maybe earlier in his career he's more of a volume, he's more of overwhelming you. I mean, this fight has it all. I mean, it's going to be amazing. You're picking JC Martinez. I like that. It's bold. I think I speak for a lot of fans when we're like, oh, this is the night. Okay, this is the fight where Chocolatito gets old. This is the fight. There's no way he could beat Estrada in their rematch. Estrada is trending this way, and Roman is on the north side of 30. And like you said, at that weight, I mean, that's really, really tough. It's going to be a great fight. We're going to see if Chocolatito can pull out another, trick. We're going to see if JC Martinez will keep this trend going of the young and upcoming guys that are now taking over this division that is probably one of the hotter divisions in boxing. Rung Visai is looking from the outside in. Estrada is looking from the outside in. What's Bam Rodriguez going to do? It's a really, really intriguing division. This is a great fight with a legend versus taking on a guy that, idolized them. I mean, that's always fun narratives. Great talk, Lee. This was great. We packed in a lot of information into this segment. I hope you fans enjoyed it. And Lee Groves, follow him on Twitter. He is a great follow. Great dude. Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.